From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of a pre-recorded episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Dr. Craig Evans, Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins at Houston Christian University and a featured scholar in the documentary film Fragments of Truth, Ancient Documents, New Discoveries. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and Professor Evans in their conversation.
I think that when people get a sense of the significance of these fragments, they're probably going to look at their Bible in a whole new light.
Well, you know, I agree, because it's one thing for us to be theoretical. Philosophers are great for that. But when you see the manuscripts, the hypothetical element recedes. You're looking at an artifact. You're looking at something that's tangible. There's no theory there. There's a fragment that people who were reading this, the older ones reading it, may well have been acquainted with apostles or acquainted with people who knew the apostles. That's how far back it goes.
Yeah.
And when you look at that, and of course I was looking at P66, which is almost the entirety of the Gospel of John, and it's at Geneva, Switzerland. There it is right in front of me, the whole thing. And I'm staring at it, and I realized, wow, when this thing was produced, perhaps as early as 190, late 2nd century, people like Irenaeus, the great church father in southern France, who wrote his lengthy treatise against the heretics, who talked about the apostles and the writers of the New Testament, when whoever wrote P66, these great second century church fathers were still living. Tertullian of North Africa was himself in the year 190 writing a treatise where he talks about the autographs of Paul's letters that are still available. And he names the cities. He says, you can go see them. You can go to Rome and you can see Romans. You can go to Corinth and you can see the Corinthian letters. And he talks about them. You know, that settles the argument. If there's some heretic out there who says, no, this is what Paul said, well, you can disprove him. You can go look at, you don't have to settle for a copy. You can look at the original that still exists. And we talk about that in the film, and I do in some of my research. And there was a time when scholars were translating Tertullian's Latin text, and they thought, can he really mean that? Should we translate this autograph? Because nobody knew 150 years ago that papyrus was so durable. It was a brand new thing that was just now beginning to be discovered. And since then, we've learned, of course, it's a durable medium. It can last thousands of years. And manuscripts in antiquity did last hundreds of years. Here's a dramatic example of that, Hank. You all know about Mount Vesuvius erupting in 79. Well, at Herculaneum, one of the cities buried under volcanic ash, was an immense library. And whoever was living in that that villa at that time tried to rescue his library, because what he left behind were 1,800 book rolls, most of them packed in boxes ready for transportation. But they didn't get away in time. And so the villa was covered with ash. The heat carbonized the book rolls, and they're still there. Now, here's where it's interesting. Our technology is such now, thanks to X-ray, MRI, and things like that, we're slowly, one by one, reading these carbonized scrolls. Hundreds of them have been analyzed now, and we're able to do what's called paleography. We can look at the style of writing, and we can date them. Well, we know when the library came to an end, it was in the year AD 79. Do you know what we've learned? Many of these book rolls, these pieces of ancient literature, they were 300 years old at the time Vesuvius erupted, and they were still being read. So we have hardcore evidence that these ancient writings lasted a long time. And so when a church father says the Gospel of John can be viewed at Ephesus, and by that point it's over 200 years, that is not an unrealistic, silly tradition. But it's been confirmed by hardcore evidence found elsewhere in the Roman Empire.
You mentioned Irenaeus of Lyon, and I can't help but think of what he said with respect to the heretics, something you also alluded to. He talked about how they weave ropes out of sand. I mean, his language is colorful and delicious. Talk about P45. It's, as I understand it, the most ancient collection of all four Gospels. And Irenaeus, by the way, I think was the first person to ever talk about all four Gospels. I don't know if that's right or not, but I think it is.
Yes, and I believe it is right. And he's not the first to know that, of course, but he's the first to make a point out of it, because in the second century, people began writing other writings. There were people in the second century, they thought Jesus was real neat and everything, but they wished he had taught something else. They want to augment his teaching or change his teaching. And of course, now we look at them and say, hey, they're heretics. And that's what they were called by Irenaeus. And so the argument Irenaeus says is, look, guys, you know, the gospel number is growing. More and more gospels are being written. The only ones we recognize are the original four. And that's why he specifies it. It's just four. And they reach back to the apostolic period of time. They reach back to the first century. These other gospels are rather newish. Sometimes he jokes and says, you know, the ink isn't even dry yet. And what I find fascinating about that is Irenaeus and other Christian thinkers emphasize the antiquity of the tradition. And that's why the idea that the autographs and early copies that date to the first century would just be discarded and nobody would care anymore. They're getting dog-eared. They get replaced with a fresh copy. They just throw them away. That is not at all the case. These originals would have been treasured and venerated, as some church fathers actually say, even as some of the secular pagans say about writings they cherish, like autographs by Aristotle, for crying out loud. And they would be 250, 300 years old, and they were sacred and preserved. And that's what Christians did, too, and in part, not just because they respected the text and wanted to preserve it, but that's how they answered the heretics. They could say, we have the originals. We have ancient copies. You don't. Your gospels, your writings are brand new, and the ink is barely dry. And so that was all part of what was going on in the second century, and I find the study of it very exciting.
P45, the most ancient collection of all four gospels, dates back to, I think, around the beginning of the third century. And when that text was copied, some of the autographs of the gospels could well have been in circulation. So P45 could, in fact, be a witness to the originals, at least the earliest copies of the Greek New Testament gospels.
Oh, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it, because when P45, and by the way, it includes the book of Acts as well, when P45 was written out and then assembled, put together as a book, small book with the four Gospels and Acts, that probably took place around 200, maybe as late as 220, 240, something like that. And, of course, it's making use of other copies. Well, the copies, whoever that scribe was, the copies would date much earlier. Those copies would have gone all the way back to the time of P52, or, you know, in through there. And so it itself is a witness to the fourfold gospel and texts that would be very early. So P45, it's in the Chester Beatty Museum, Library Museum. I've been there myself, and I had the chance to just sit down and have several plates of P45 representing all four Gospels right in front of me. And it's a very neat handwriting, very delicate, neat handwriting. And as you said, it's all four Gospels, and there are no surprise readings. We're not missing a chapter here or there. We don't have inserted a new paragraph. We don't have any crazy new readings that change the theology. Nothing like that. It's the same text.
What's your thought about scholars like John A.T. Robinson and his book Redating the New Testament? He's saying that all of the books had to be written prior to the destruction of the temple in AD 70 because none of the books mention it. And this
I think that's a very powerful argument. Some people are impressed by it. Some people aren't real sure because we do have some writings. I'm not talking about the New Testament here, but some other kinds of writings that are after the time of 70 and they don't mention the temple's destruction. But nonetheless, I think that is a powerful argument. Take, for example, the book of Hebrews. Hebrews makes the argument that Jesus' death means that no more sacrifices are needed. Jesus is the ultimate high priest that mediates between God and humanity. Well, if the temple were destroyed, the priesthood has been ended, the altar has been knocked down, and Hebrews is being written after 70, you would think the author would, you know, it plays so well into his argument. How could he not mention it?
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Craig Evans. Can we trust the Bible? The documentary film on DVD, Fragments of Truth, featuring Dr. Craig Evans, could be faith-saving for thousands of believers who have been caused to doubt their faith because of false or misleading claims about biblical authority and accuracy. To receive your DVD of Fragments of Truth, Ancient Documents, New Discoveries for yourself, or as a terrific gift to a friend or loved one, simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org.
Can we trust the Bible? The Christian faith is firmly rooted in the teachings of the New Testament, but can we really trust the Bible? Skeptics will tell you that the authenticity of the Bible cannot be trusted, arguing that the gospel manuscripts have been doctored to push a theological agenda. In the Faith Life original film, Fragments of Truth, Dr. Craig Evans takes this claim head-on, traveling around the world to investigate the most ancient New Testament manuscripts available. Along the way, Dr. Evans highlights groundbreaking new evidence, demonstrating that the case for the reliability of the New Testament manuscripts is not just strong, it is stronger than ever. To receive your DVD of Fragments of Truth, Ancient Documents, New Discoveries, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.
The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition is the comprehensive collection of the most often asked questions Hank Hanegraaff has received throughout his four decades as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. With more than 500,000 copies already in print, this newly revised and expanded Collector's Edition helps seekers and skeptics alike sort through the truth on topics such as reliability of the Bible, religions and cults, the resurrection and afterlife, and many more issues vital to a better understanding of God in Christ and our relationship to Him. To receive your copy of the Complete Bible Answer Book, Collector's Edition, Revised and Expanded, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us at equip.org.
Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership
at equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org.
Let's rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Dr. Craig Evans in their conversation.
And so I think John Robinson's observation applies very well in that case. Hebrews has to be early. I would argue the same thing for James. He would have to talk about to settle questions and fears and so on. He would have to talk about the meaning of the destruction of the temple if that writing were written after 70. So I think there is a lot of merit to the late Bishop Robinson's argument that we should probably date these writings earlier. I certainly argue for earlier dates for the Gospels. I'm taking very seriously what Papias says. The elder he's talking about is the Apostle John. I know Eusebius wants to change that. That's because Eusebius in the 4th century is in a different context. He's got a Christian emperor on his side. He doesn't want to talk about Jesus returning and destroying the Roman emperor. You can see the politics get in there, and so he discredits Papias. Papias knew the Apostle John, and the Apostle John said, Peter preached, Mark wrote it down, and this becomes the source for Matthew, Mark, and Luke. That's what's being talked about. This is extraordinary. Early, we're talking the 50s, no later than the year 60 or 61. And so all of this stuff is early. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and the book of Acts, I think, are all earlier than 63, earlier than the great fire that destroyed half of Rome in 64.
Yeah, and the reason I bring this up is because I was just thinking about a comment that C.H. Dodd made when Bishop Robinson asked him about his book redating the New Testament. And Dodd said in response to Robinson, he said, yeah, I have to agree, a lot of the late dating that is done is arbitrary and it's based on prejudice, the prejudice of the critics.
You know, let me add to that. I know that statement by Dodd. I greatly respect his scholarship. There is a funny thing, Hank, that goes on in the world of New Testament biblical scholarship and criticism and so on. A lot of it's insecurity. You get these young people, men and women, they're in their 20s, they have a master's degree, they're PhD students, and they're under pressure, and they end up I don't know if they even are conscious of it, playing the game of, I'm every bit as critical as you are, or I'm more critical than you are. And criticism and skepticism get confused. Skepticism is one thing, criticism is something else. I'm all for criticism, but there's a lot of skepticism out there that's uncritical. And so just saying, I don't think Paul wrote that letter, that's not necessarily critical. To insist that a gospel is written late. I mean, there are scholars who are suggesting the Gospel of Luke didn't get written until the second century. I have a commentary on Acts in a prestigious series, and the author who died recently said, Acts wasn't written until 120. This is getting absurd. We're making dates that are so late, they're getting later than some church traditions talk about them. It doesn't make any sense. And it's a hyper-skepticism. It really isn't a criticism. It's not being critical. And I think you're right. And so one of the things to do is to deny traditional authorship or, and it goes hand in hand, argue for real late dates. And somehow that makes you more critical. I don't think so for a minute.
I want to talk a little bit about internal evidence that undergirds the absolute reliability of the biblical text. I'm talking about the actual testimony of the authors who were eyewitnesses. For example, the famous saying of the Apostle John when he said, that which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked at and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. So you have autographs that are preserved in manuscript copies, but that's a preservation of what was communicated by those who were eyewitnesses to the majesty of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I know that one is very, very powerful. And of course, I think part of the problem with 1 John is that a tradition of scholarship developed, and I'm not going to blame liberals or skeptics for this, because there were evangelical scholars who saw it this way too. The idea that the Johannine letters, and you just quoted the beginning of 1 John, had to do with Gnosticism. And because it supposedly had to do with Gnosticism, this started dating it really late. So this is some kind of reaction to Gnostics who in the second century were changing things and saying, oh, yeah, you know, the Christ has come, but he really wasn't in flesh. And you get this docetic idea that, you know, if you look carefully at Jesus, you realize you could actually see through him. He was more of a phantom. I don't think 1 John has anything to do with that. 1 John is connected to the Gospel of John. The allusions are obvious that ties that first letter with the Gospel. And what we're talking about is a response to the synagogue. And it's very early. It's not second century. The synagogue that is beginning to say, perhaps after 70, but maybe even before, as one other scholar has recently argued, as early as the 60s, the synagogue is saying, hey, we don't think Jesus really is the Messiah. We don't think the Messiah has yet come. And that's what is meant by the Messiah hasn't come in the flesh. It's not docetic. It's not a thrust against Gnosticism. It's simply a statement that the Messiah hasn't yet come. Not really. And so 1 John is saying, are you kidding? We've seen the Messiah. We've touched him. The word of life has come in flesh. And so if we understand that, we realize, wait a minute, 1 John is earlier than we realized, has nothing to do with Gnosticism. It's instead defending the reality of Jesus' appearance as the Messiah in the context, a polemical context, with the synagogue that says no, which means this is very early apostolic tradition. It is eyewitness tradition.
And that's something I'd like to park on for a long time, but I don't think time permits. Let's move quickly to external evidence and maybe a bit of a discussion about how significant it is that from external evidence, it's possible to piece together highlights of the life of Christ wholly apart from the Bible. So you have cooperating testimony coming, in some cases, from people who were huge critics, not only of the Bible, but of Christians. And if you had adhered to a Christian worldview and you got into the pathway of Plinius, for example, you might well either recant or die.
Well, yeah. I've done some work on that very tradition in Plinius the Younger. He's a troubleshooter. He's a governor of Bithynia, and Trajan is the emperor, and I think it's just fascinating. And of course, if you know the context, you can read his letter. When he says he interrogates the Christians, Roman interrogation usually involved a whip, and so, you know, the innocent ones get away with the whipping, the guilty ones end up being executed or imprisoned. And then he says something like, he says, well, all they do is get together before daybreak. Well, right away we know these are slaves. The only time they can meet is before their masters wake up and expect breakfast and so forth. Then it goes on to say they sing a song antiphonally back and forth to somebody called Christ as though he's a god. And then they promise, take vows not to embezzle property entrusted to them. That confirms that we are talking about slaves. And then they go on to say that they have a meal, and Plinius says, an innocent one. I find that fascinating, because what that and we're talking about a guy who's writing around the year 110 AD, the allegation that Christians were cannibals. And of course, it's the words of institution. This is my body. This is my blood. You know, this is for you. Take, eat, you know, and so on. And so the Greco-Roman world was hearing lies about Christians told by critics saying that Christians were cannibals. And when you combine that with Christians' compassion for children who were cast out as unwanted infants, then you can see where that goes. So, oh yeah, Christians, sure, they rescue unwanted infants. They're mostly girls thrown out. The Christians rescue them, and then, of course, in their weird cultic meals, they cook and eat these infants and so on. And, you know, the church has to defend itself. Even Tertullian, at the end of the second century, is still defending the church against that kind of charge.
Yeah, so the external evidence, absolutely incredible that you can piece together highlights of the life of Christ even apart from the Bible.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Be sure to tune in again next time when we will continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. Craig Evans. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand the life-changing outreaches of the Christian Research Institute, Hank would like to send you the film on DVD, Fragments of Truth, Ancient Documents, New Discoveries. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The preceding program was pre-recorded. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter.
Can we trust the Bible? The Christian faith is firmly rooted in the teachings of the New Testament, but can we really trust the Bible? Skeptics will tell you that the authenticity of the Bible cannot be trusted, arguing that the gospel manuscripts have been doctored to push a theological agenda. In the Faith Life original film, Fragments of Truth, Dr. Craig Evans takes this claim head-on, traveling around the world to investigate the most ancient New Testament manuscripts available. Along the way, Dr. Evans highlights groundbreaking new evidence demonstrating that the case for the reliability of the New Testament manuscripts is not just strong, it is stronger than ever. To receive your DVD of Fragments of Truth, Ancient Documents, New Discoveries, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.